Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Yeah, welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and coming up here in a few moments, Joan C. Williams will be joining me to talk about her new book titled Outclassed, How the Left Lost the Working Class and How to Win Them Back. I've been reading this book and she's bringing up some really great points in how Democrats lost the working class to Trump and to MAGA Republicans, which is really unconscionable considering how they work only to enrich and empower the corporate authoritarians. It boggles my mind that Democrats continue to lose the working class. The Trump regime and MAGA Republicans are there to do one thing. They serve the oligarchy, those who are untouchable and can buy politicians. The same MAGA Republican politicians who refuse to hold town halls as they work on passing the MAGA murder budget. The same MAGA Republicans who refuse to hold town halls while dear leaders across the board tariffs are slamming the working class since across the board tariffs are regressive taxes. The same MAGA Republicans who are working to supply the massive tax breaks to corporate donors and also to the drugged-out Elon Musk while gutting Medicaid, food stamps, Medicare, and Social Security. The same MAGA Republicans who work to block debt forgiveness for millions of college students while they grant massive tax breaks to Betsy DeVos and former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder. The same MAGA Republicans who said that we had to tackle our debt immediately or else it's all over, and now they're adding $2 trillion to the debt with the MAGA murder budget. The same MAGA Republicans who said they're working class are now fighting to gut the food assistance for some 3 million working class Americans because the tech bros need extra tax cuts. I mean, these guys cannot hold town halls and face their constituents because they're afraid of the people. They claim to be the working class party, but their actions always show they're anything but a working class party. And, you know, they also have no principles except to show submissiveness to their dear leader. They will bow to dear leader, whatever dear leader wants. I mean, that's pretty pathetic when you also try to portray yourselves as the masculine party. I mean, these guys shrink and bow to dear leader at every step. Yes, they suffer from shrinkage. So much so that you big-time free marketers gave up that 100-year stance because he's a pro-regressive tariff president. So if he's for tariffs, that means, oh, wait, I was always against tariffs until now because dear leader says be for tariffs, so I will bow to him. Such manliness. But to further illustrate how, in my view, Republicans, MAGA Republicans, have zero working class principles, let's look at Michigan. MAGA Michigan Republicans all voted against allowing Michigan farmers to use their lands for renewable energy farms. This not only brings in tax dollars to local governments, but it helps farmers earn extra money and thereby keeping their lands. Now, we've talked about this renewable energy siting law several times here, but it is such a perfect encapsulation, a perfect illustration of how MAGA Michigan Republicans are never about the working class. They could give a damn about the farmers. And we talked about how Democrats passed the bill in the name of helping farmers and in the name of property rights and, yes, in the name of freedom. Republicans, beholden to the fossil fuel lobby, voted against the interest of farmers, Michigan farmers, farmers who are going out of business but are now being given a lifeline thanks to smart, progressive policies. Now, get this. Michigan House Republicans introduced a bill this very week that would block municipalities from adopting or enforcing ordinances, policies, or resolutions that ban the use of natural gas in their locality or block the installation of natural gas infrastructure, according to Michigan Advance. Well, wait a second, everybody. Hold the phone here. I thought you guys, you MAGA Republicans, were all about local control. That's why you had to block farmers, because you're about local control. Oh, wait, that's right. You're only about local control to block renewable energy, but not anything from the fossil fuel industry. I got it. And we know who pays your bills. Again, you guys are working class frauds. Local control. As long as it suits your pro-corporate agenda. I get it. Attacking these working class frauds is easy to do, yet I feel like Democrats either don't know how to do it, they don't have the stomach for it, or are just afraid to take on MAGA Republicans on that kind of a front because some of them answer to the same corporate masters. It doesn't have to be that way. And we progressives can reclaim the working class vote, but we have to reach them rather than pushing them away. And I think that's what a lot of Democrats have been doing, especially these so-called centrist Democrats. Again, I don't know what makes them centrist other than that's code word for corporate Democrats. So again, it doesn't have to be that way. We can reclaim the working class vote just by talking to working class voters rather than trying to forget about them and shun them like New York Senator Chuck Schumer said that we should have done years ago. Yeah, you think Chuck Schumer's really good at reaching working class voters? Joan C. Williams, author of Outclassed, is standing by, and I'm looking forward to our discussion. Remember to subscribe and like the show wherever you're listening, and to also subscribe to the show on YouTube. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
As always, you can reach me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. So if you listen to this week's Monday Musing, I shared with you some observations that I made while traveling through Western Pennsylvania last weekend. Western Pennsylvania is Trump country, and there's no mistaking that because, like I said, once my dad and I exited the turnpike around Murraysville and drove east for about another hour close to Johnstown, we counted Trump signs, Trump banners, Trump posters, even makeshift signs, bumper stickers, and so much more. And as we've talked about many times here, it really wasn't all that different than what we see here in my mid-Michigan county of Gratiot. But this was a bit more pronounced, I think, in Western PA than it is here, I think. And during our trip, you know, we were wondering why people in rural America, and especially in rural Pennsylvania there, why are they backing this guy and his administration who, you know, in my opinion, have really shown with their policies that they really aren't about the working class, especially the rural working class. So I was wondering, you know, what am I missing? Because living in rural Michigan, working in farm radio, spending lots of time in rural Pennsylvania as well, I feel like I have somewhat of an understanding of rural America pretty well, but I remain puzzled at the Republican Party's, what's the word I'm looking for, hold, I guess, on the working class voter, not to mention Trump's popularity with so many working class Americans. But then again, I have spent the last few months here flabbergasted at how ineffectual many Democrats across the country really are at connecting with working class voters. Joining me to talk to us more about this economic and cultural shift by working class Americans towards MAGA Republicanism is Joan C. Williams, who's just released a book titled Outclassed: How the Left Lost the Working Class and How to Win Them Back. Joan C. Williams is a professor of law at the University of California College of the Law, San Francisco, and is a Sullivan Professor and the founding director of the Equality Action Center at UC Law in San Francisco. Professor Williams, thanks so much for taking a little time to be on Left of Lansing this week. We greatly appreciate it.
Delighted to be here, Pat. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you had success with another book that you wrote back in 2017 called White Working Class. And in your bio, it says that former President Biden carried that book around with him during the 2020 campaign, which I do remember. Did you feel compelled to write your new book Outclassed because maybe you felt like, despite Biden's victory in 2020, which was pretty close, that Democrats were still struggling to connect with not only white working class Americans, but with the entirety of the working class in the country.
I did. I felt like after 2016, for a couple of years, we were really having a conversation in the United States about social class, which is pretty amazing because we've been sort of willfully blind to the impact of social class for much of our history. But then in around 2018, I felt like all of a sudden there gelled on the left an interpretation of what had happened when Trump was elected the first time. So that it was the conventional wisdom became it was all about racism. And there was no way that Democrats could win back working class votes without giving into racism, which obviously from the left isn't an option. So what I wanted to explain to people was that, and this was long before Trump won again, I was writing this book, that racism is playing an important role, a very important role, but class is too. F. Scott Fitzgerald said that the sign of a truly intelligent person is to be able to keep two contradictory ideas in your mind at once. We need to be able to keep two non-contradictory ideas in our mind at once. But it took me a long time to kind of figure out what the relationship between these two was. And it's really pretty simple. It's that racism is one of the strongest predictors of Trump voting. So if you are racist, you're probably very likely going to vote for Trump. But that's not why he wins. He wins because he also wins the votes of a much larger group of non-college voters with moderate racial attitudes. And this was really dramatic in 2024, because you had non-college people of color shifting towards Trump 35 points when you compare 2012 with 2024. And young people of color shifted towards Trump even more by over 40 points. So racism is a factor, but it's not the only factor. Class is also a very, very important factor. And what the studies show is that there are two groups of Trump voters. Both of them, they're economically quite progressive. They're kind of Bernie types, all of them. But they're very, very different in important ways. About 20%, this is 2016 data, because it's too close to have the 2024 data, but about 20% of Trump voters were economically progressive. They were very focused on being white and Christian. Those are very central to their identities. And they had cold feelings towards people of color and were very, very anti-immigrant. These are the people who probably cannot be lured into a leftist coalition, any kind of coalition on the left. But there's another group that's just about as large, 19%, sometimes called the anti-elites, and their attitudes towards people of color didn't really differ from that of other voters, non-Trump voters. Two-thirds thought that climate change was a serious problem. They had the highest endorsement of gay marriage of any group, and they were least loyal to Republicans. So what my book Outclassed does is basically has a step-by-step guide to building a new coalition to attract away chunks of this 19% of Trump voters, the anti-elites.
I'm glad you talked about the role that racism, and I've even also talked about, especially with the last election with Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, that misogyny played in the role. I mean, I think obviously that had some role to play in that election. And I think that anybody who kind of denies that, they're fooling themselves, of course. But Joan, you bring up, however, it's more than that, that Trump has been able to garner even this extra amount of voters towards his side. And maybe that's what helps explain why he always, it seems like, outperforms when he is on the ballot. Not so much when it's just Republicans, but when he's on the ballot, he's able to outperform what the polls leading up to an election are showing, because pollsters have obviously underestimated how many non-voters will come out to vote for him. I know I'm not really saying this like articulately, but do you kind of get where I'm getting at?
I mean, what the thread I'd like to pick up, Pat, is the idea that misogyny is at work. I think masculinity is at work. What the research shows is that when men's masculinity is threatened, they tend to double down on masculinity. I mean, there's a wonderful social science experiment where they bring people into the lab and they tell one group of guys that they're kind of masculine, but also kind of feminine, so masculinity threat. And they found those guys were much more likely to support wars. They wanted to buy huge cars. They just wanted to prove, yeah, I'm masculine, I'm masculine. And I think that a lot of men's masculinity feels threatened. And this goes back to the ties between culture and economics. Why do non-college men often feel threatened? Well, there is the fact that if wages had continued to rise when productivity did, like they did after World War II, wages would be 43% higher than they are today. And in the 15 years before Trump was first elected, that accounted for three-fourths of the decline in that post-World War II decline of wages. And during that same period, nearly all net job growth was in gig work and short-time work. In other words, no prospects, often no benefits. Since 1989, wages have risen 83% for college grads. But you know what? For non-college grads, they've risen hardly at all. And so the result of all of this, basically that workers are not receiving a fair share of productivity, is really the loss of the American dream for many families. Nearly all Americans used to do better than their parents, but of those born in 1980, it's just about an even shot whether you're going to earn more than your parents. And many, many men, no matter what their class level, their identity is very tied up with being a provider. And the level of inequality now in the United States is so high that not only do low-income men feel like they can't be providers, but these middle status voters, the middle 50%, and those are the ones that are flocking to the far right, both in Europe and America, these middle status voters, they feel that they're not going to be able to be providers either. They're not going to be able to deliver on the American dream. And I think it's important not to just write off this masculine anxiety as misogyny. It is masculine anxiety because masculinity is a cherished identity for most people. 70% of men say that they feel that they receive positive feedback when they behave in masculine ways. But their roots really have to do with the very changed position economically of the middle class. This is the fragile and failing middle class, and people are very angry about it. That's one of the main reasons Trump voters are so angry. People often say, why are they so angry? And it's like, why shouldn't they be angry? These are the facts.
How was Trump successful in tapping into this loss of masculinity, or at least, at least those who
Perceived
are
ability to deliver.
perceived? Yeah, there you go.
Perceived
Yeah.
ability to deliver. Yeah. Well, I mean, what people really want, in my view, and this is the opportunity for the left, people want something really simple. They want hard work to pay off in a stable middle class standard of living. So Trump has talked about this. He talks about how he's going to bring back blue collar jobs. Now, I think good blue-collar jobs are important, but he often means bring back manufacturing jobs. Only problem, the tariffs are making are threatening American manufacturing right now, not helping it. And the focus on manufacturing jobs really just bites off a little piece of the apple. I think the reason that people, men and women, are very angry is because hard work doesn't pay off anymore in a stable middle-class life. Often you have families trying to juggle three, four, even five part-time jobs, no benefits. Farmers are hardly making ends meet. Lots of farmers are going out of business. If they aren't, they're wearing themselves ragged with very tragically high rates of suicide. And so I don't think that Trump delivers for this group, but he certainly talks a good game and says he's going to deliver for this group and he's going to get them good jobs. The other thing that Trump does is he uses what's called a specific style culture. You don't really think about it a lot, but there's at least two very different style cultures in the US. Among elites, and here I'm really talking about the sort of top 20%, the college grads who are in the higher part of the income distribution. They're not the 1%, but they're the top 20%. And among those elites, the style culture is what I often call Rachel Maddow culture, sort of. The ideal is to be smart and articulate and talking from data. I'm kind of enacting this style culture right now before your very ears. Unfortunately, Democrats, that's how they talk to voters. They seek to communicate, I'm a smart person talking to you, a smart person. And the result is a style culture that sounds very elite and condescending to the many of in the two-thirds of Americans who lack college degrees. In sharp contrast, Trump enacts a very different style culture among the kind of the middle 50%. I'm going to call them the missing middle, or call them blue collar, although of course a lot of them aren't. There's the tire salesman and the nurse's assistant as well in that group. But among that group, what they value is not fancy talk, but straight talk. They value authenticity and tell them like it is. Trump doesn't sugarcoat things, said one voter. So Trump talks in this sort of blunt, much more down-home style that's characteristic of blue-collar style culture. And meanwhile, Democrats are up there with their overstuffed policy manifestos, talking to college graduates. That kind of talk just doesn't communicate that they care about people with college degrees.
And maybe this is what you just described gets to something that, many of us in Michigan, we've talked about for a long time here. But I remember during one of the debates in the 2016 election between Trump and Hillary Clinton, they were talking about NAFTA, and Trump declared it to be one of the worst things to have happened to the manufacturing industry. And I'll never forget this. Hillary Clinton responded by saying, "Well, that's your opinion."
Your husband signed NAFTA, which was one of the worst things that ever happened to
Well,
the
that's your
manufacturing
opinion. That
industry.
is your
You
opinion.
go to New England, you go to Ohio, Pennsylvania, you go anywhere you want, Secretary Clinton, and you will see devastation.
And when she said that, I knew she was either going to lose Michigan or barely win it. And she lost to Bernie Sanders in the primary race that year because he also highlighted how
I know.
NAFTA and neoliberal economic policies hurt the state. So I know it's kind of a simplistic way of maybe looking at it, but does that partially explain what you were kind of just talking about there, how Democrats did lose the working class votes by kind of just dismissing them?
Yeah, I don't think it's simplistic at all, Pat. I think it's right on. And you're also right that, why are people in rural Pennsylvania, why are so many people in Wisconsin, why are they so angry? I've been talking about how neoliberalism, the idea that we should just get out of the way of the free market, that we should let every country produce what they can produce most efficiently, that this kind of deregulation and free market was going to deliver democracy in China. I mean, we actually believed this in the 1990s. And that kind of neoliberalism really radically increased inequality among individuals, as I just talked about, but it also really radically increased inequality between regions. Huge proportions, 70 to over 90% of job growth and economic growth went to superstar cities, a relatively few number of economic areas, of metropolitan areas. And a lot of areas of the country where you used to be able to work hard and gain a stable middle class life and create one for your children, those areas have been left behind. And the Democrats have been really disadvantaged by their failure to understand that people are angry because so many individuals can't work hard and achieve a stable standard of living, but also because so many regions have been left behind. And even the people in those regions who themselves are doing okay are angry that they can't make a life for themselves. And if they can make a life for themselves around the area they grew up, their children can't. A huge proportion of Trump voters live within 2 miles of where they grew up. And again, this goes from, we were talking about two different style cultures. That's really part of what I call the class culture gap. There are really two different cultures in the United States. And the clash between these cultures is what's driving people to the far right. In that missing middle area, they inculcate in themselves and they seek to raise their children for the kinds of jobs where you have to get up every day on time without an attitude, to a job that often is kind of repetitive and where you're an order taker. To survive in that kind of job, you need self-discipline. And so they're very focused on self-discipline and also the institutions, the traditional institutions that anchor self-discipline, religion, the military, traditional family values. And in the what I call the scrum for social honor, because status is a very important motivator for people, they make different moves than the elite makes. Everybody, all groups, tend to stress the high status groups they belong to. And so these middle status voters, they stress often being American, because that's one of the high status categories they belong to. They can't pretend to be billionaires, but they are very proud of being Americans. So if you look at the polling, people in this middle group are much more focused on being American than people in the elite group, because the elites are super different culturally. They're not focused on self-discipline. They're trying to raise their kids for jobs where you have to be at the top of your game. And so they're very focused on self-development, the kind that is suitable for someone who's going to enter a job as an order giver, where you have to be at the top of your game and it's very, very competitive. So the things that they value very often are issues that relate to this central ethic of self-development: abortion rights, LGBTQ rights. All of those are fit into this logic of self-development. And their move in the social honor is to be members of a global elite and to think of people who are Americans as, well, they're not sophisticated. So this, unfortunately, Democrats have kind of chosen sides in terms of the issues they place in the priority with this top 20% of college grads. And I'll just give a few examples. Climate change, you know, for my crowd, is really high up in our priorities. But among non-college grads, it's number 14. And according to, I think that was a 2022 study, defense of democracy, which my crowd is very obsessed with now for all kinds of good reasons, Kamala Harris put at the center of her campaign. It was very, very high for the kind of core college grad audience that Democrats think of. But it was way, way, way down low for Trump voters. And that's because inequality genders low social trust, including trust in political institutions. If you and your kind and your area have kind of been screwed economically for the past 40 years, you might not think that the system that did that deserves your loyalty. You might be open to trying something different, as shocking as that may sound. What we really have is a situation where I think those of us on the left have to understand kind of the deep structure of populism. And there's really two populisms. There is left populism, kind of the Bernie kind, the rich are robbing you blind. That's focused on the economic elites, kind of the 1%. But then there's right populism, which is they're looking down on you. And this is focused on cultural elites, the top 20%, really those college grads. And so when we hear Trump voters being talked about as duped, dumb, deplorable, what that does is fuels the power of right populism. The move going forward is to shift back to left populism, they're robbing you blind, and stop fueling right populism by understanding that the lives of people in the middle are really different than the lives of the college grads in the top 20%.
We only have time for one more question. You did mention in your book how Michigan's Democratic governor here, Gretchen Whitmer, has been quite successful in gaining support of voters across the class spectrum. And you point out maybe she's figured out a formula here by connecting with working class voters through working class values. And I'd say to a point she's done that, but what made you come to that conclusion?
It started with one of her campaign mottos, fix the damn roads. That is very much of a direct, authentic, unfancy speaking style. That's a very much a blue-collar speaking style or middle-class speaking style. I'm told she even wears a leather jacket. Is that true? She wears a black leather jacket.
From time to time. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that remind you of? She's attuned to a style culture that is non-elite. You know, there's a whole group of people saying, well, what Democrats should do is just follow the working class and adopt their cultural values. And that's not going to work because Democrats, to win, both need the college educated and they need a much larger share of non-college educated. And that's exactly what Gretchen Whitmer does. She thinks up policy initiatives that have appeal to both groups. So, for example, she worked with GM to have a huge investment in EVs. Okay, electric vehicles, she's got the climate change crowd, but also blue-collar jobs, she's got the working class crowd. She helped open up the first new auto plant in Detroit for a really long time. Okay, she got the working class blue-collar jobs, but then that plant also gave local hiring preference to people who lived in the area. People who lived in the area are very heavily African American. So she's got the focus on racial justice and the focus on blue collar jobs. She argues for abortion rights by saying they help Michigan economically. She doesn't tie it into self-development. She ties it into economic betterment. And so what she does is she conceptualizes policy issues in a way that's going to appeal both to college grads and to these middle status voters who aren't college grads.
I can't really argue with that point. We talk a lot about her. And like with anybody else, there's always some good policies, bad policies. But I think one thing that you really did nail, though, is that she did figure out that makes it sound like it's not authentic. I mean, she's been a Michigander her whole life, so she knows how to talk to Michigan voters. So, yeah, just talking normally, I think, is one way.
Her goal is not to say, I'm a smart person talking to you, another smart person. Her goal is to say, I know this is your concern. I'll deliver for you. That's really different.
All right, Joan. Well, thank you. You know what? Before we do depart, I know you wanted to talk about a class bubble quiz that you put together, and maybe it's something that some of our listeners here would like to partake in. So go ahead. Explain what that's all about.
So the tensions between these middle status, often called blue collar voters, and the college educated elite are a lot of what are driving American politics. And, you know, if you're wondering where you stand culturally, you're a lucky ducky because we have just developed the class bubble quiz and Pat will host that with this podcast so you can find out where you stand. And I look forward to hearing from you.
Joan C. Williams. The book is called Outclassed, How the Left Lost the Working Class and How to Win Them Back. I will make sure to put links to your book so that way everybody will be able to click on it and get a copy of it wherever they are listening to this podcast. Joan, thanks so much for coming on and for spending some time here on Left of Lansing. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation, Pat.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audio Boom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Well, that was a good talk there with Joan C. Williams, and I'll put links to her book, Outclassed, as well as links to the other book that I mentioned that she wrote called White Working Class. And I will provide a link to the class bubble quiz that Professor Williams mentioned at the end of our interview. It's just 10 quick questions, and I did take the quiz, and I scored a pretty classy score. That's what it said. I'm considered 50% culturally working class and 50% culturally elite. I'm sorry, but I will always prefer a cookout over a fancy dinner, but I'll always prefer a delicious Michigan craft beer over a freaking Michelob. Sure, when I was in college, Michelob was considered a luxury beer, but I made it a point to afford decent beer once I got out of college. See, I had goals, real goals in life, everybody. Working class goals, if you shall. Click on the link that I provided for you wherever you're listening to this podcast, or just go to classbubblequiz.com and let me know how you scored on the quiz and what you think about Joan's ideas that we discussed. And check out her book because it's a good read, it flows well, and she provides key takeaways and highlights at the end of each and every chapter. So please pick up a copy if you can. You don't have to agree with everything Joan has to say, but she does bring up excellent points through her years and years of research, and she's helping illustrate why the National Democratic Party is losing the working class, which is what we've been covering here since the election, right? I mean, I hear so many out there saying, you've got to attack Trump and only Trump and vote blue no matter who. Well, that's not working for us as Republicans grabbed full control of the federal government. And here in Michigan, MAGA Republicans grab control of the state house. I look at that and I have to come to the conclusion that we need to have our own Tea Party fight inside the Democratic Party, because things aren't going to get better unless there are better Democrats who aren't afraid to talk to walk with, and to represent the working class of the United States. Now, I wanted to share with you some thoughts on what Joan and I brought up in that interview, where I agree with her, where I disagree with her, and that's what will make up this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. Let's start first with the last question of the interviews surrounding the electoral success of Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And if you listen to the show for the past year or so, you know that my approval rating for Governor Whitmer has dropped somewhat. It has soured a bit. I mean, it was just a couple of months ago that I railed against her White House visit, especially as Trump signed off on some fascist and anti-American executive orders. And I don't get this angle of Whitmer's people trying to tout bipartisanship during a time while the Trump regime is destroying Michigan each and every day, particularly while he's pushing 50% tariffs on steel that'll harm the auto industry, an industry that is quite important in the state of Michigan. Anyway, where I agree with Joan in her assessment on Whitmer's political acumen and success is how she spoke plain English. And I'm talking about her first election against Bill Schuette. She always, always made Bill Schuette appear weak, elite, and someone who just doesn't connect with working Michiganders. She made him look weird. And that really wasn't hard to do. And like Joan said, Whitmer's Fix the Damn Roads was an effective cross-cultural message by using the state's crumbling roads as a symbol and a metaphor of the Michigan Republican Party's 40 years of failure. She highlighted an issue that all Michiganders could agree on, and she did it by speaking normally. I remember one of my coworkers at my former station clutching their pearls because Whitmer said the word damn, and that's when I personally knew that she would win. Politics is half optics, and Whitmer won the optics game by knowing how we Michiganders speak. It's something that Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib knows pretty well. I remember when she said that Democrats would impeach that MF-er. I think after Democrats got control of the House of Representatives in 2018, and that caused a bit of an uproar and had people like Mitch Albom from the Detroit Free Press clutching his pearls over the loss of decorum, even though I'd say crossing the picket line back in the 1990s, Mitch, was kind of a loss of decorum, but hey, that's me. However, Rashida knew that her words would resonate with her Detroit voters and many Michiganders because that's who we are. Whitmer understood this as well, and I think she still understands it. And yes, she wears that leather jacket sometimes and wears her Detroit Lions gear because she understands connecting with the working class is an important and vital goal of any politician, especially for the Democrats. And Joan Williams is correct in saying that Whitmer was right in connecting abortion rights in the state, not just as a moral right, but also as an economic right for women. Abortion rights are economic rights, and Whitmer made that argument, and made that argument quite effectively, too. Plus, Whitmer used her working class support to sign the end of Right to Work for Less, upping the state's working families tax credit, and ending the retirement tax. And she used her position to highlight her support and to later sign on to gun safety bills, common sense gun safety bills, including the safe storage law, which is already being used as a deterrent for parents with guns in the house. And that is still a popular bill. So Whitmer did have success, and she did it by connecting with the working class. Now, one part that Joan Williams brought up that I disagree with, and I think more and more working Michiganders are disagreeing with too, is the part of the corporate welfare that is being used to supposedly bring in auto manufacturing plants to the state. Now, Joan had an interesting point in saying that by backing EV cars, Whitmer both satisfied progressives fighting against climate change and satisfied workers by bringing in manufacturing jobs. And for the Trump regime to gut EV tax credits is ridiculous, as China will continue to corner the EV market, all because the regime cares more about the oil and gas lobby. We all know that. But as we covered here about a month ago, when I spoke with Bridge Magazine's Paula Gardner, the hundreds of millions of dollars that we have spent on trying to entice more manufacturing here isn't exactly paying off. Actually, it hasn't paid off. And that's why there's now bipartisan support to end corporate welfare in the state. That's a working class issue that Gretchen Whitmer, for some reason, continues to dismiss. Then Whitmer signed off on a MAGA Republican-backed bill a couple of months ago to cut the minimum wage and paid sick leave that was guaranteed for working Michiganders because the restaurant lobby said to cut it in half. Then Whitmer signed off on that wretched auto insurance reform bill a few years ago that didn't save people money and is causing families hardships throughout the state, especially for those with loved ones horrifically suffering from auto injuries. It didn't have to be done. So Gretchen Whitmer's got a mixed bag. And again, when it comes to her potential presidential run, I'd love to see what her angle would be in getting the working class vote. People want authenticity. They don't just want performance. Optics are just a part. They actually want to know how you are going to help their lives. So wearing a leather jacket, fine, that's cool. Touting the Detroit Lions, yeah, that's pretty cool too. But it's all about how are you going to take on corporate greed while also defending the working class in the country. So we will see what Gretchen Whitmer will do if she decides to run, which I think she is. Now, Joan mentioned how working class Americans tend to be patriotic, or at least view themselves as patriotic. And I can see that. I think I'm patriotic as well, or else I wouldn't be doing this. And that's where I will reiterate my belief that all of these indivisible groups and all these progressive groups who are out there protesting what the Trump regime is doing to all Americans, yes, that is a start. However, there's got to be a little bit more to it. And I believe there should be red, white, and blue everywhere, because it shows everyone that we love this country too. It's our country too. And it shows that we're willing to fight for it. And it allows everyone to realize that we're fighting for a better America. So more American flags, I think that would be a good thing. And it would also put more pressure on some of the MAGA people who believe more in the Confederate flag than they do the American flag. Now, Joan also mentioned how the people are angry everywhere. And it's just not Trump voters. It's Democratic and independent voters, too. The polls are showing that right now, as independents are really souring on the Trump regime. But that's where I felt that the Kamala Harris campaign fell short in the end. They were fighting, I thought, too much to keep the status quo. And when she said that there was nothing that she'd do differently from Joe Biden, well, that was a losing moment. Many Americans feel like their hard work isn't paying off, and they don't feel like the elites really seem to care all that much. Farmers are going out of business, and that's why I never understood why Michigan Democrats refused to run ads showing how they passed a bill allowing farmers the freedom to save their lands by using their lands for renewable energy farms, and then go out there and show everyone that MAGA Michigan Republicans voted against farmers, put them on the defensive. Democrats, oh, they just don't know how to fight, and they suck at messaging. But the people are angry, and they don't see Democrats fighting for change from the status quo. And everybody, that's just the harsh truth. That's why Joan's correct in saying that Democrats have to take an anti-corporate, pro-working class attack line. And that's how you put Republicans on the defensive right there. I mean, we're seeing this with the MAGA murder budget. How many town halls does John James, does Lisa McClain, does Bill Huizinga, or Jack Bergman up north? Well, whatever. He never holds any kind of meetings. They know what they're doing, and they are ignoring the people. They are trying to hide from the people because what they are doing is anti-working class. Again, Democrats should have been running ads during, let's say, the NBA Finals, attacking the MAGA murder budget, calling it the MAGA murder budget, and putting Republicans on the defensive. Yet, they did nothing. And I don't know what it's going to take for Democrats to learn that a populist message, a populist progressive message, is a winning message. Finally, Joan mentioned the loss of masculinity, and that feeling or loss of masculinity is something that's hurting Democrats. Now, with a changing economy, the ways of the past are leaving, and that does mean the days of the man earning the top wage and providing for the entire family is more and more gone with the wind, or as Joan has said a few times in her book. And maybe that means developing a new age of masculinity is needed, in which it's not a caricature. That being masculine is not a caricature or what Fox News or Joe Rogan push on younger men, where they think they can just behave like pricks and behave like fools. If you don't mind, I'm going to use a little boomer and Gen X language here for a second, but where Andy Griffith, Charles Ingalls, Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince, or Mr. Rogers, did they all suffer from not being masculine enough? No, they showed toughness, tenderness, and they showed understanding. We understand the world economy is changing and that women got more chances, which is a good thing. So yeah, the world is changing, but being a man, being a real man, isn't about grabbing a pussy wherever you feel like it or when you can get away with it. That's not being a man. Being a man is adapting to the situation at hand and finding new ways to make it in the world. I think that's something that we progressives have to continue to push. Because for all this talk about how we need to bring manufacturing back here and men need to get back to the factories, but while a 2024 Cato Institute survey shows that 80% of Americans believe our country would be better off with more manufacturing jobs, about 73% said they would never want a factory job. So while there's a bit of nostalgia out there for the old economy, we know that we're moving into a new economy and that a majority of Americans, even though they say, yeah, we need more manufacturing, they don't want those kinds of jobs. So it's up to progressives to address those economic and social concerns that men have while also trying to lead them into the new economy. For instance, you're no longer going to work in coal, but now you can work in clean energy plants. And progressives have great ideas like paid family leave, so that way a husband and father can spend time with their families. If something tragic happens to them, they'll be able to leave their workplace if something happens to their family. And like Vito Corleone says, a man can never be a true man if he doesn't spend time with his family. Today's corporate structure belittles the idea of family and requires that people work more and more with less people in their work office. And also, by the way, do all that work for lower wages and benefits. And finally, getting back to the cultural reasonings as to why rural Americans are trending more to the Republicans and to Trump, we talk about the value of work. But how is it that working Americans support someone who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and who's never cared one bit about the working class, while at the same time, the same people will ridicule someone like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for once being a bartender? I mean, I guess that's where I don't get things. I'm unable to bottle the edge when it comes to where we are right now as a country. Because if voters truly believed in meritocracy, well, there's a woman right there who worked for everything that she got, whereas Trump has never worked a hard day in his life. Now, ask yourselves this question. While AOC is currently polling as one of the more popular Democrats in the country, why is the Democratic Party elite working on defeating her just as much as MAGA Republicans are working on defeating her? Think about that one for a while, if you must.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Joan C. Williams for coming on this week to talk about her book, Outclassed, How the Left Lost the Working Class and How to Win Them Back. Send me your thoughts on what Joan had to say and pick up a copy of her book by clicking on the link that I'm supplying for you on wherever you are listening to this podcast. Let me know what you think of her ideas and what you think about my takes on what we talked about at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Look, it's going to take more than just swearing and wearing leather coats to win back what it took Democrats for years to lose. But those changes can happen, everyone. They can. And we progressives can make it happen because we are the true working class wing in American politics. And when Jones said that people are angry with our institutions and they have no trust for our institutions, well, that also means that we are angry with the Democratic Party, a party that led us down this path, a path that gave us the Trump MAGA Republican regime. Translate that anger into action and support those. Please support those who are fighting for a true populist progressive future. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.